This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh, wow, what a thrilling day today. I get these books, sometimes I just fall in love with them, and I can't stop reading them, and I am so grateful to the author for writing them. And the book I am going to talk about today is called Willa of Dark Hollow, and the author is Robert Beatty, and it is an amazing book. Hi, Robert.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Wow, you know, I was practically raised in a forest, so this book, on so many levels, I loved it in just so many ways. I'm from Michigan's northern Upper Peninsula, and I really was raised practically in the forest. So this book and the story about Willa really touched my heart.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, the writing is beautiful. Now, this is a standalone, although there's one book before this about Willa, and this one is The Dark Hollow. Beautiful cover. Amazing cover.
Yes, thank you. Yes, this book can be read standalone, so if you haven't read any of my previous books, that's okay. Or there is chronologically a book, a Willa book that did come before.
Yeah, but you can read this one. But the truth is, when somebody reads this one, they're going to want to go back and read the first one, too, because just to get to know Willa and the people of, well, the people and the inhabitants, let's say, of the forest that you have created is so lovely. And there's so much about the book I love. Your writing is fantastic. You are a wordsmith. You just put words together just right. It's funny how, you know, when you look at a book and you say, well, how did he accomplish that? At the end, I know I cried a lot. Quite a lot reading this book, and when a writer can do that, when a writer can just grab your heart really and just relate so much of the story to, I don't know, to our lives, to something that we want deep within us, I thought it was brilliant.
Thank you. I do want to say, especially for the writers in the audience, that my writing abilities did not come easy. It took many, many years of practice. So I don't want people to think that you're just born as a New York Times bestselling author or anything like that. I started writing when I was 11 years old, and I just kept doing it year after year because it was my passion and my love. And I just learned as much as I could every time I wrote a new novel. And that's, I sort of taught myself how to write over the years.
Well, it is a craft, and it is something that you have to work at. And you certainly, but then at the end, when you come out with some book like this, that's so seamless, and it's awe-inspiring. Really, it is. I was so thrilled with it. I know that it's supposed to be, you know, it's marketed for kids, and we mentioning best-selling author, so it hit the best-selling New York Times best-selling list in its first week, right?
That's right, yes. So it is ostensibly for people that are from 8 to 108.
That's what I think.
It's a very narrow range. So you have to be between 8 and 108.
That's it. That's exactly.
And over 108, it might be a bit too intense for your heart, you know.
Well, the woman who lives in the condo above me is 102, and I know she's going to enjoy this book because I will give it to her. And I know my goddaughter, Kanisha, will, oh, she will get so excited with this book because it is just so, it's an intense read because we really, really love Willa. So what do you want to tell people without, you know, giving away the whole story? What do you like to tell people about Willa and the storyline in general?
Sure. So Willa's a 13-year-old girl. She's a member of an ancient race of indigenous people who live deep in the forests of the Great Smoky Mountains. So the book takes place in 1901, and it's a combination of history, mystery, and magic, sort of all blended together. And like we've talked about, it's for adults, but also for kids. A lot of moms and daughters or grandmothers and granddaughters are reading it together. Willa isn't exactly human. She's this forest girl. She's been taught by her grandmother to love and truly understand the trees and the forest and all the animals. And she has the power to blend her skin. Her skin is not black or white or brown. It's no one color. It's whatever color is around her. So when she hides in the bushes, her skin goes green like leaves. Or when she's by a pool of water, her skin will turn the color of blue, the color of the water. And so she camouflages, kind of like a chameleon. She has many other forest powers as well, but that's just a little bit of a taste of her magical forest abilities.
Well, she is magical. And now, of course, it's, you know, for some people, you know, who don't know geography, they might not even know that there is a real place called the Great Smoky Mountain National Park.
Well, that's right. So this book, along with all my other books, takes place in a real location. It takes place in the Great Smoky Mountains, Klingman's Dome, Cades Cove. All of the areas are real-life locations, and it's set in a true historical time. So I try to be as accurate as I can be with the setting and the locations. Well, although I do have to mention, because you mentioned it first, although I live now near to the Great Smoky Mountains, I live in Asheville, North Carolina, which is where I am now. But I was originally born and raised in Michigan.
Oh.
Spent plenty of time in northern Michigan, like you mentioned you did as well.
Oh, well, that's nice to know. Yes, you know, the Upper Peninsula, of course, we had these wonderful forests, and I must say that my father was involved in lumber, the lumber business. So I have, you know, both things going on as I'm reading this book, because it reminds me a lot of that time. And the interesting thing is, when my father came back from World War II, one of the things he wanted to do was to have sustainable tree farms where you didn't cut down the old growth forest. And as a matter of fact, our family still has the original 80 acres of the two grandfathers, and we have the trees are still there. And we only cut them on rare occasions when it's time to, you know, take a tree. And they're very valuable trees, actually. I mean, we could cut down the whole forest and have made lots of money, but we only cut down like three or four trees a year in that little 80-acre plot we have, because we're very, very deeply into sustaining the forest.
Yeah, and that's one of the main themes of the story. So mainly I wrote it to be a fun and engaging and sort of, and fulfilling book. But one of the themes is sustainability and the interconnectedness of nature and figuring out ways of, one, being aware of the complexity and beauty of nature around us, but also to sustain it and live in harmony with it. And that's what Willa is all about and what her adopted father is trying to do as well. So yeah, in this book, you have these, because it's 1901, you have these industrial loggers coming in with steam-powered cutting equipment and trains, and they're tearing down the forest. clear-cutting large areas of the forest where Willa lives, and it's breaking her heart and literally destroying the world she lives in. And so the story is very much about why are they doing that, and she has conversations with the leader of the loggers, and, you know, they have their reasons for doing it. The country needed the wood at the time, and so that point of view is shown and discussed, but also the point of view from Willa and the Cherokee who live in the forest as well, and the animals, and all the interconnections and all the different competing needs for the forest at the time.
Well, you are very in tune with the forest. I mean, I felt like you're bringing out the things that you felt as you're in this forest, and it is such a unbelievably beautiful place.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it was inspired originally from my trips to the Great Smoky Mountains with my daughters. So I actually write for my daughters. That's who I'm writing to when I write my books, and I read my books to them, and they actually help me to create the stories and to develop the ideas and the characters, and I'll read chapters out loud to them, and they'll tell me what they like and what they don't like and where I should improve it or expand it. And so it's a family project when we work on our books together.
And speaking of your daughters, you have three daughters, and they have beautiful names. What are their names?
We have Camille Winter is my eldest daughter. Genevieve Arwin is the other. And Elizabeth Rain is my youngest, who's now 10.
They're such lovely names. I thought, oh, this is just perfect for you, for the author of Willa. Yeah. Willa. I thought those are just perfect names for the girls.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, my wife and I, of course, work on it together, but my wife normally has jurisdiction over the first name, and I have jurisdiction over the middle name. So, but we kind of work on it together, of course.
Well, I thought it was so beautiful. I thought their names were so beautiful. And it's nice to know that, that they're part of the process, and that you're thinking about how they're going to react to these stories. It's exciting for them, I bet.
It is. They definitely enjoy the process, and it's very good for me as well. I wrote for many years all sorts of different books and never found my audience or my focus or my true voice until I started writing for them. And then that's when I had my first breakthrough novel, Serafina and the Black Cloak, and I've written 6 novels since then with them. So I have really enjoyed the creative process of writing with them and for them.
Well, the Serafina series is wonderful. It's, again, history, mystery, and magic all combined in a wonderful, wonderful series. And now with the Willa stories, I think that you're touching the hearts of so many young women who are going to read these books, are going to, I hope, will change their attitude about a lot of things, and to think more. You know, I was lucky that I had that wonderful childhood where I was free from morning to night. You know, once I left the house with my peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, I could just run out there with a book. I'd take a good book, and I sometimes with friends, sometimes alone. But I had all this time to dream and to have all these wonderful thoughts. And I so fear that the younger people today are so deep into their electronic things and watching television. But a book like this, I hope it will open their eyes, and that they will want themselves to, you know, sit under a tree. There is nothing like sitting under a tree. I tell people, you know, to have a hammock and to go just in your backyard and sit under a tree is so wonderful.
It really is, and climb a tree as well.
Oh.
That's very much about what the book is about, which is to to be aware of just the beauty and all the little details and all the interconnections of nature all around you. You know, when a bird flies by and you can tell by the whistle of its wings what kind of bird it is, or the sound of the birds as they're singing in the forest, or the different types of trees and how the trees support each other and help each other through their roots and through their leaves, and all those beautiful interconnections. And just to be a little inspired by that. It's not meant to be a science book or anything like that, and it's not meant to be a hard book to read. It's really meant to be a bit of an inspiration, just to kind of open your eyes and your ears and your nose and experience the natural world a little bit more deeply.
Well, even kids who live in the city, there are always great parks. There are botanical gardens. I know in our area we have this fantastic botanical garden where they have put beautiful benches, chairs out there for people to just sit and relax under the trees and read. And that's, you know, parents should think about that. Find a location where you can take your kids away from, you know, away from the electronic world and get into nature. Give them this book and boys and girls will love this too. You know, the boys will love this, I think, just as much because it's exciting. There, as you said, there's some mystery in it. And just that feeling of what the magic of trees and the magic of the forest, and of course I love the bears, you know, and of course I cry and the sadness, and my mother was once because we had an outhouse, and one time a bear sat in front of the door. She was stuck in there for 3 hours.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, it was awkward. Fun. Well, we, you know, in those days, we were in our cabin and we were playing cards. We were playing Pinochle, and we were so involved in it that we didn't notice that she had gone out to the outhouse
until she was trapped up there
3 hours later. But but that's part of the fun of nature, and just the, as you said, the birds. People don't appreciate nowadays the joy of listening to birds.
Yeah, I agree. It's one of my great joys. And I'm not an expert ornithologist or anything like that, but I do love bird watching and listening to birds and identifying their different songs. And for example, in my area just recently, I heard a newcomer, and because of the time of year, the great crested flycatchers just arrived. And, you know, they flew up from Colombia and Peru and countries in South America like that, and flew a long way to get here, and they just arrived. And I'm sure that many people walk through the city where I live and probably don't even notice that there are great crested flycatchers up in the trees and don't necessarily recognize their song. And that's a little bit about what the book is about, is to be aware of these things that are happening all around us.
Exactly, to stop and think and appreciate what's around us. And of course, I want to say particularly that, you know, they've done a beautiful job with this book. The paper is lovely. It's, of course, it's a Disney Hyperion production and beautifully done. I love the paper, which I think also for people, for young readers, I think it's great when they have a book that has real paper, real nice paper, and a beautiful cover. Oh, they did a gorgeous job, didn't they, with this shiny cover? I love it.
Yeah, they did a really good job with it. It's a very old school kind of book, like the way books used to be made, with a deckled edge, which is a rough edge, and it's hardcover. And yeah, it's a beautiful book, and the artist did a great job depicting the feel of magic of Willa's world.
Exactly.
You mentioned boys. Boys have been reading the book a lot, and I meet them at my book signings, and they're very excited to be reading the book. They honestly, it surprises me a little bit, but they don't seem to care at all that it's that the main character is a girl. They love her adventures. They love the action and the animals and the battles.
Exactly.
And the different things that happen. And I think that's really cool. Like I said, I wrote it for my daughters to show them a girl in action, to show them a kind of a strange and unusual girl with a heroic heart who comes up against many challenges and difficulties and must overcome them. And I really wrote it for them, but it's also very cool to see that these boys are learning just as much as they are. So it's just as important for the boys to see the girl in action as it is for the girls to see the girl in action.
Exactly. That's exactly what I felt when I read the book. I said, I know that, you know, like I used to teach, you know, Sunday school. And unfortunately, I don't do it, and we don't do it anymore. But I know this is the kind of book that all of the students there would have just loved, boys and girls, because it is. There's action. There's intrigue. You want to know more about how this magic works, how Willa works, and it's just and it reads so beautifully. I mean, the writing is top notch. You can't get better than this, and you deserve to be a best-selling author on New York Times. And I'm just very honored, really, to talk to you, because I think, as I said, sometimes I get I read a lot of books, but then there are those that will just touch my heart. And Willa of Dark Hollow, it certainly does that. Now, do you have a website you want people to go to?
Yes, my website's Robert Beatty, that's BEATTY, books. So robertbeattybooks.com. I'm also on Facebook. I'm very active on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube as well.
Okay, and the book is available hopefully in bookstores. They should put this book right up by the front door, and I will tell everyone, and it really is, every adult I know will enjoy this book, because we were all young once, and we can dream about those days and imagine them again. And the writing is superb. I hope that the bookstores will put this right at the front door. Everybody should grab this, but it's available online wherever books are sold. And it's Willa of Dark Hollow by Robert Beatty. And I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. It's been a real honor. And I love also the Serafina books. And perhaps one day you'd come back and talk about that series with me.
Sure. Well, it's been an honor speaking with you, a real pleasure. And so I just want to say, I hope everybody enjoys Willa of Dark Hollow.
Okay. Thank you very much. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Robert. Bye. Wow. What a book. It's so beautiful. As he said, it's old-fashioned, wonderful people. Oh, you have to, you know, I know that everybody's reading things on you know, your tablets and things, but oh, to have this book. Disney Hyperion did a wonderful job. The cover is all shiny and embossed, and the paper, the edges are so great. And this is a book for Kanisha. You hear me? This is a book for Kanisha. We're going to go to commercial, then I'll be right back, and we have another great guest coming up.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. And I'm just waiting for a call in from my next guest, and we're going to be talking more about national parks. Wow, this is a great day for national parks because, of course, you know, when I was just speaking to Robert Beatty about Willa of Dark Hollow, and now he lives next to a national park, and this is the wonderful thing, you know. You never know what life will bring you as a writer. Find something that interests you. Find a place that interests you. And in his case, he lives next to the Great Smoky Mountain National Park. And he's put his book, that's the location, and he writes about it so beautifully. And as you're reading the book, you definitely know that he spent a lot of time in the park. He knows the trees. He knows the streams. He knows all about what the different trees are. He knows about the birds. It's such a beautiful thing that can happen to you as an author. Everybody, you know, you write books, and sometimes you just have to find that passion. In his case, he decided to write books for his three girls. And, of course, he came out with a very... Serafina is a wonderful, wonderful series. So it was great when I first got the first Willa book, and then to read this one. You know, this one, I just touched something in me. And I know that I cried a lot in this book because, you know, you do cry when a tree is cut down in a national forest if you love national forests. And I know somebody who really loves national forests, and that's Allison Johnson. Hi, Allison.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, great. Well, you know, it is so perfect to talk to you today because my guest earlier in the day, my first guest of the day, was Robert Beatty, who set his book in the Great Smoky Mountain National Park.
And how wonderful.
And he wrote a book called Willa of Dark Hollow, and it is set in the park there. And he, of course, he lives near there or in almost inside the park, loves the park, and his book just touches people's heart. Anybody who reads this book will love national parks. And then, I mean, but it's just by happenstance that I had you to follow to talk about the absolute joy of national parks.
Oh, that is so wonderful. And I hope that book inspires people to go to the parks.
I think it will. It really will. Because at the end, he thanks everyone at the National Park, you know, service who helped him with the book, who helped him, you know, with the locations, and just encouraged him. And so that's what you're here to do today. Encourage people. Visit national parks. People aren't going to be flying overseas for vacations, I don't think, but you can drive out to national parks, that's for sure.
That is for sure. Yeah, I think, you know, this summer, while everyone's itching to get outside, a road trip to a national park, whether it's one near your home or a bit farther away, is the perfect getaway.
Wow. Well, you know, so let's start with the which one? The Secrets of National Parks?
Let's start with the secret.
Okay, tell us about some secrets of national parks.
Yes, so for this book, it's our second edition of The Secrets of the National Parks, which was really exciting to do. We actually reached out to park rangers at every national park throughout the country and asked them to not only review what was in the first edition, help us update that and revise it to be the most current information possible about the parks, but also to give us their hidden secrets inside each of the parks and their favorite things to do. So we got a lot of really good insider information about, you know, what you could do to get off the tourist trail, to get off the beaten path. One of my favorites that they told us about at Mammoth Cave in Kentucky, there's a Violet City Lantern Tour, and it's well advertised, it's just people don't know to take it. And so this tour, rather than walking the illuminated pathways in Mammoth Cave, which is the world's longest known cave system, you're carrying a kerosene lamp through the caves, which just gives you this otherworldly vibe and a different perspective on the park. And they just gave us tons of information like that, the best sites, the best campgrounds, the best overlooks and trails where you could go that get you away from the crowds and make you feel like you have these nature retreats all to yourself.
Well, one of those parks recommended in there is the great Smoky Mountain Park.
Yes, it is. And you know, one of the things about Great Smoky Mountains is that it is the most popular park to visit in America. It receives the most visitors year over year. So the best secret that they give is to go in the off season. The park is still open. There might be some limited hours, but you're going to have more of the mountains to yourselves. You're going to have those trails to yourselves, and you might have to deal with a little bit of cold weather, but it's worthwhile to make sure you have that retreat.
Well, it's a beautiful, beautiful place. I've been there a couple of times. My boys were in Scouts, so we did a lot of camping. We did a lot of different events all over in a lot of national parks, and that particular one we just loved.
Yeah, it's a favorite for a good reason. It's beautiful, and there's so much diversity of landscape and nature to see. It's absolutely wonderful.
And of course, if you're going out a little further, you can always head over to Theodore Roosevelt's National Park.
Yeah, and Theodore Roosevelt National Park is actually one of the least visited parks, surprisingly enough, but it has so much great history in it. And the book highlights some of the best spots to see. You can see the cabin Theodore Roosevelt once stayed in, and there's a great driving route from each end of the park, one to the other, so that you can really take in the park in one day if that's all you have to spare, and see a lot of different sites along the way.
Well, what tell us some of the things that you advise in traveling to these national parks. What some of the information that people can get from the books?
Yeah, so in our Guide to National Parks, this is the 9th edition, and we have some really great information here. You're going to learn both when the best time to go is, how far in advance you need to book, especially if you're going to be camping within the parks or staying within the lodges. These parks can fill up quickly, and I think they're going to start filling up really fast as people are getting out for the summer. So our book advises you, you know, certain places you might be able to plan a week ahead. Others you might have to plan months ahead in order to have a camping reservation within the park. And you're going to find the best sites, the wildlife that you're going to see, the best walking and hiking trails. If you're a climber or a bike rider, there are paths for you in all of these destinations as well. And really just what you need to, itinerary items to make the most of your experience in each destination.
Well, all of the locations, of course, you know, with the National Geographic book, half the fun of the book is just looking at the pictures. They are so, so beautiful. The photography is amazing. And I know you can get just lost in the book. You're looking at the photographs, which are so, so good. It is really a thrilling book.
Oh, thank you. And yeah, you know, I think one of the best things to do is flip through the book and look at that beautiful photography and create your national park bucket list. I mean, you're going to want to hit every park once you see the images in this book.
Exactly. Well, Crater Lake, I mean, when you look at the images of that one, the blue is so blue. I mean, it's like, oh, I want to see something so blue. It's so perfect.
I know, and that's actually the top of my bucket list right now, to get to Crater Lake. I have yet to get there, and it's just from everything I've seen, from what my travel writers at National Geographic had told me about, it's just so unique and so stunning to see in person.
Well, I wanted to see it too. I never got out there, and it just, and now looking at the photographs, I thought, oh my goodness, I want to go there. Explain to people a little bit about that one, because that's intriguing. About,
yeah, so Crater Lake is actually, it was created by a volcano, and it filled with this otherworldly water. One of the fascinating facts about Crater Lake is it gets a lot of snowfall and rain every year, and the water does leave the lake, but they haven't found where it leads to. There aren't rivers or streams at the bottom of the mountain or anything that they're finding the lake water in, so there's still a lot of mystery to Crater Lake. And there's only one trail that really gets you to the shores of the lake in it. And it's not too strenuous, so most people can take it. But it's really one of those sites that you're looking into what feels like the crater of a volcano, but there's this magical blue water that's there that almost looks like glacial water. It's really beautiful.
Well, you must have so much fun. I always say, you know, if I had more kids, I would say, grow up to work for National Geographic. I know it's nice to grow up to be a doctor, you know, but doctors have such a rough life really nowadays. It's so stressful. Grow up to be a lawyer, you know, after a while they burn out. They might be rich, but they burn out. But if you grow up to work for National Geographic, you're always happy. You get paid. You get paid to do something that's just pure fun.
It is, you know, I always say that I'm lucky that I love my job and I have fun at my job. And even, you know, especially in this last year when we couldn't get away, being able to travel from my desk every day with the help of the National Geographic explorers that are out in the field still and sending back reports and beautiful imagery, it's such a wonderful job and experience. So I agree, become a National Geographic editor.
I mean, that's a real goal, you know? You know, most people don't even, I mean, no one thinks about it. I don't think anyone ever advises their kid, grow up to work for National Geographic. But because all of the people that I've talked to from National Geographic, all of you, just are so happy. Just so
it's
happy.
It's a place where you're passionate about what you do every day, which is really fun to be a part of.
It is. Whether it's, you know, of course, I had Blue Zone Kitchen was on.
Dan Buettner.
Yes. I love Dan Buettner. He is so cool. And that book is so wonderful. And so one after another, I just get so thrilled with National Geographic books. And they are, now, you know, Father's Day is coming up, and, you know, there is a book out there for every father, and these travel books, they will absolutely love them, and they make perfect gifts, because no one ever gives away a National Geographic book. They keep them.
They're collectors.
They are. They keep them forever. I mean, we kept our yellow National Geographic magazines, and I still have them from 1953. So people don't give them up easily because they are so beautifully done. The production value is perfect. The paper is great. Of course, everything that the writers are all so wonderful. I always tell people, if you're looking for a gift, give a National Geographic book. People will appreciate it and love it and keep it for years.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice to hear. And yeah, I think these books are a perfect Father's Day gift. If you have a dad who loves to camp, to explore, to hike and bike, this is the perfect gift that he can start dreaming and planning his next vacation.
Exactly. And the wonderful thing, and even if you're not going to travel yourself, if you know you're not going to travel, you know, maybe you're stuck in the house, to have the books and to travel in your mind, it's something, there's something very calming about it. As you turn the pages, and I would turn the page and I'd stop at something like the giant sequoias, and I would look at them and just marvel at these trees. And I actually looked at the bark over and over. I kept saying, does it work? How does that, you know, it's, and because the photography is so detailed, you can really get lost in it, and it's just, I think it's just wonderful to give this to give these books as a gift.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, it really transports you to these places. And what I love is that our experts and explorers and the park rangers also gave us so much information about the history of these parks, both geologically and environmentally, but also just the cultural history of all these places. So there's so much to learn about them, even if you don't get a chance to go and see them in person.
So what other book, beside, in addition to the Secrets one, what else do you recommend?
So we have Secrets of the National Parks and Guide to the National Parks. I would say everyone should get their dad a copy of Bob Ballard's latest book, Into the Deep, which is a fascinating journey. Bob Ballard is a National Geographic explorer and oceanographer, very well known for discovering the Titanic shipwreck in the ocean. And he tells a fascinating story about all his ocean discoveries and, you know, how he got to do what he did, and a lot of stuff that was involved that was government secrets at the time that he was exploring. So that's a really fun story for people, especially if they love oceanography and history. That's a really great Father's Day gift to give to your dad this season.
And of course, the 100 Drives of a Lifetime. There's book after book. What to Eat When, one book after another, and you've been involved in all of these books. It really is so much fun.
It really is, and it's a lot of variety to work on. We have 100 Drives, we have What to Eat When, Blue Zone Kitchen, we have a beautiful photography book called America the Beautiful that incorporates voices from across the country and what they love about the states that they grew up in, as well as beautiful National Geographic photography. So all of these books are different lenses to view and appreciate the world we live in, and that's what I find so fun. And even cookbooks like Blue Zone's Kitchen, Dan Buettner takes you around the world to these places where people have lived to 100 and beyond and explores their cultures and helps you learn to live the way they do in the Blue Zone. So all these books just provide a fascinating insight into the people and the places that make up our globe.
Well, after this very difficult year, this pandemic-y year, where people have been in the house, really to take this time now to plan a trip. It's May. You can start planning. If you haven't started planning, plan now and get yourself reservations, either in the campgrounds, or if you're lucky enough to get in one of the there's so many, the national parks have so many wonderful, wonderful hotels within them that are just fantastic. But most of them probably are pretty booked up. But
you never know.
You never know. Yeah. You can try. You can try. And of course, there are camping areas around the parks. And just to be there and to get away from, to tell you the truth, to get away from the news, everybody needs to sort of refresh their minds with nature. And be under the trees and be next to a stream and a babbling brook. And because brooks really do babble if you sit there and listen to them, right?
They do. And I think exactly what you're saying. We all need to get outside right now. Have a little nature retreat, a little peace and quiet and space for ourselves. And these parks are the perfect place to do it.
And you don't need to wear a mask out there. when there's nobody around except the bears.
You'll be safe and secluded.
Yes, and exactly. Very nicely secluded. And just listening, to listen to the trees. There is nothing. It is really such an emotional thing to be one with a tree. And that's why I was so happy when I talked to Robert Beattie today about this Willow of Dark Hollow, because he is one with the trees there. It's like his heartbeat goes along with the trees, and you can see it in his writing about the Great Smoky Mountain. I know that there will be so many, he just hit the New York Times best-selling list the first week of the release. And I know that there are going to be so many kids who are going to read this book, and they're going to say to their parents, we have to go there. We might see Willa. So so they, you know, they can live in hope, and they will find a wonderful place just to explore and to find a national park, because you never know, Willa might be in another national park too. So don't just stick to that one, and find a place where you can enjoy and imagine. And then one of the things that when you go to these parks, you afterwards, when you look at a National Geographic book, you say, wow, those photographers, they captured it. You know, everybody tries to take pictures, but nobody captures it quite like the National Geographic photographers.
Yeah, they have a good eye, and they make you really feel like you're there.
and you want to, and that you're there, and that you want to be there. And, you know, I always think it's delightful to talk to everyone from National Geographic. I've mentioned it before. I mentioned it to several. Now, what's your official title at National Geographic? You are some big shot.
I am a senior editor with the book division.
Okay, so you're a big shot, right? A senior editor. My goodness gracious. You went from working for Rachel Ray, right?
Yep, I went from Rachel Ray Magazine to National Geographic.
Okay.
It's been an exciting journey.
It has been. And you, so you are a big shot. And I am telling you that you have to make, in National Geographic, I'm going to tell this again. I've mentioned it to some of you other editors, but I think you're like maybe the one of the bigger big shots. Thanksgiving should be National Geographic Gift Day. You should start doing commercials early in the fall that people should, when they visit people, and this year people will want to go and visit people at Thanksgiving. It, instead of bringing wine, instead of bringing flowers, bring a National Geographic book. Because as I said, they are books that people will keep. So they, and everybody, and this is what I did. I started a few years ago when I was still having, you know, Thanksgiving and people over, a National Geographic book. And I said, everybody sign, you know, read, because during the day as you're sort of recovering from, waiting for the turkey and then recovering from the turkey, people have time. I said, everybody write their names and write a little message in this book. And they, everybody did that. And now I have all of those books. This was a Thanksgiving book. You know, it can be any subject that your family's interested in. It can be animals. My particular one was, one year was birds. And everybody who came to the house had to sign that book and put a message. And it becomes a lasting memory. So I'm going to give this again because you are a senior big shot. Really, you don't advertise on television during the fall, or really too much, but you should absolutely make Thanksgiving the National Geographic Gift Day. And that's my advice to you, because I want everybody to have a National Geographic book in their hands on Thanksgiving. And also, it helps if you have a nice big book there and you have lots of people over and they're waiting for that turkey and the house is, you know, filled with all this smell and people keep saying, when is it going to be served? When is it going to be? They won't bother you if they have a National Geographic book. They'll be so enthralled with the book, they'll just read and not bother you so you can finish cooking. And that's my recommendation to you. How about that, Allison Johnson? Is that a good idea?
I love that idea. I think that's perfect. And what a fun way to start a new Thanksgiving tradition. I love it.
Okay. So I want to see some advertisement on television starting in September. You guys have to get some real top-notch advertising out there. And you can thank Patsy with a Z for this wonderful suggestion. How about that?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Well, Allison Johnson, I think you're terrific, and I think you are one of the luckiest women in the world because you're doing something that you love.
Oh, thank you. I agree. I feel very lucky.
Okay. Well, everybody, go out there and get a National Geographic book and start with the one that we were talking about today, Secrets of National Parks. It's which edition? Second?
Second edition.
Well, because it's just gets better and better every time. Again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today, Allison.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Oh, what a book. What a book. Oh, I love this book. My goodness, people, you can actually maybe travel. It would be so nice if people would travel. And they are doing, people are buying RVs like crazy, which is a nice thing because Rita Moreau has written a series. Now, she started a series about somebody who travels in an RV. And so her first book is in the series called Wheeler Dealer. It is out. It is available wherever books are sold online. And so Rita Moreau, who does our book buzzes, is started this new series. And I know she's having so much fun. And she's had this pandemic a year. And she's already written 3 books in the series. So you can see, and it's all about a lady who decides to travel. Instead of going into a retirement home, she decides to hit the road, and her name is Mabel, and she's, let's just say she buys a used RV and, well, trailer, and she finds out she's got a little guest in there, unexpected guest, in the name of Irma, who is a specter of sorts. So a wonderful, wonderful new series. And I'm very, very proud that Rita Moreau is part of Joy on Paper. And you can get this book, the new one, A Wheeler Dealer. And It's just fun when a writer finds a subject that they love to write about, just like Robert Beatty started writing books for his daughters, and now Rita Moreau writing books for people who loved to be on the road, because she and her husband George were on the road when they retired. They took off in an RV and traveled the country, and now she's using all of those things that she learned about traveling. She's using them in her new series, and it's going to be fun to follow her along. And she's going to be a guest on the show again soon. She was, I can have her on the program whenever I want because she's part of Joy on Paper now. But everybody, you know, it's just thank you also for your emails. And remember, my email is patsy.radio@gmail.com. If you have a book, write to me, and I would be happy to, you know, have a look at it. All you have to do is send me the book and send me a note, and I will you know, see if I can fit you in here. But we're pretty busy, so get to me soon. Because remember what I always tell everyone, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry. You never know, but you won't find out unless you start writing. So get in there and start writing and say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. And he saluted me, and I saluted him. And everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful day. Bye-bye now.